Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked the dunk!
Here's Wade against Green.
Euroskill. Basket.
The Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of allyoucanheat.com. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How are you doing, David?
I am doing great. It's St. Patrick's Day. I'd like to wish all my Irish friends a happy St. Patty's Day, and hopefully I'll be joining you at the bottom of an Irish calm bar soon enough.
You know, last St. Patrick's Day, I went out and to this Irish pub in San Francisco. Because we wanted Irish car bombs, and we were like, you know what, this place probably has them. And it was like called like O'Hallahan's or O'Callaghan's,
sure.
You know what I mean? So it was so obvious, and it probably had like a shamrock on the bar. So we walk in, we're like, Irish car bomb for me and for all my friends. And they were like, we don't have those here. And we were just floored how Irish pub doesn't have Irish car bombs. So what they actually did was, they made us deconstructed Irish car bombs.
Okay.
So we bought we spent a lot of money on this, but it was worth it. We bought all the separate ingredients for the Irish car bomb and then made it ourselves. Because they had all the ingredients back there, but they weren't allowed to make it for some reason.
Okay, now maybe I'm confused, because what is it that you think an Irish car bomb is as composed? What I thought was it was like a version of a Boilermaker, where basically it's a shot of Irish whiskey dropped into a Guinness.
Yes.
Okay, because that's only two ingredients from what I could tell there. It sounds like they gave you a much more complicated recipe.
They weren't allowed to, what was it? They weren't allowed to drop it in for us or give us a shot of, they couldn't give us a shot of the Jameson with it. Or it was something like some weird, really strange rule. So we got like an actual like glass of Jameson, and then we were able to like, I don't remember, like pour it into shot glasses ourselves or something like. Is there a strange thing, but
it did the trick though.
Yeah, you know, I think it did. I just remember eating pizza and burning my mouth afterwards.
Yes, it did the trick.
So that's my St. Patrick's Day story. Podcast over. See you next week. All right. So I think everybody's feeling good anyway, with a little bit of their own kind of post-game drunkenness, still probably feeling it, of that Heat-Cavs game. That was unbelievable.
It was.
That was.
I want to bring up what you mentioned last time about the ups and downs of the season, how many different phases there have been to the season. Because this feels like just part of that same recurring theme where all of a sudden, like here we are in the postseason stretch, you know, the playoff race, the heart of it. And that win versus the Cavs all of a sudden has everybody thinking, oh, we're going to win the next 16 games straight and cruise into the playoffs. And I'm not so sure that's the case.
Yeah, it's kind of, we've been here before, right?
Right.
You know, we were here, I don't compare this to like the Christmas game when we beat the Cavs, but I mean, there's been games where the Heat have just looked really good. The Clippers game, the Bulls game.
Right.
Even the Mavericks game really early on in the year, there was that Orlando Magic game where they played really well, but just kind of like the Magic just hit, they came back at like the last couple minutes, but they still played really well, and I thought that was kind of encouraging. I mean, there's just been like different parts of the season. There's been games where they've looked really great, and then just like the next game just tanked, and then, but then there's also been like different segments to this season, and it's now we're kind of okay, is this a new segment of the season where things just magically and suddenly click, or is this just one of those, okay, that was a great game, it was the Cavs, they got up for it, it was at home, LeBron came back, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to doubt that this is the way the Heat are going to play because of all the emotional stuff behind this game and the fact that they just always get up for these games, it seems like. But then there's that whole, you know, try to look at it objectively, and this is the healthiest that this team has been relatively all season. This is the best, that is certainly the healthiest they've been since the Dragic trade, and Whiteside's back and not getting suspended. He only had two personal fouls, played most of the game with one personal foul, so it looks like maybe he's starting to figure it out. I don't know. There's reasons to kind of go both ways on this, so I'm interested to see what actually happens.
Yeah, I think the Wade performance, I think that seems like it's the barometer for how the season will move forward. I think his health isn't going to be a question anymore, and I know that's almost like I'm jinxing myself and him. Moreover, I hope that's not the case, but he looked so incredible against the Cavaliers, and I don't know how much of that is just like a manifestation of his incredible will to beat LeBron, or how much of that is just him kind of finally meshing with Goran Dragic and looking really, really like an incredible two-way duo there. I mean, for all the talk of the great backcourts in the NBA at the start of the season, if Wade plays at this level and Dragic plays at this level, they would be in that consideration, right? I mean, they looked pretty amazing against the Cavaliers. And again, that's what you could look at going forward. Is Wade going to continue to give you that kind of a performance? Obviously not. 32 points on 13 of 18 shooting, that's a great night even for him. So I'm curious to see if he can just remain a little bit more even keel and still be productive, giving you 23 to 25 efficient points a night.
Yeah, and if you look at that backcourt, if we look at it singularly, Dragic had 20, so they scored 52 combined points. If they can get right around there, like 50-ish combined points a game, I think that's like, you know, 45 to 50 points a game between the two of them. That's doable, right? Like, we could almost expect, like, something close to that. 42, 48, kind of just in that ballpark.
I mean, it's possible, but you just said 42. Do you mean 52?
Like, 42 to 50. I think either way, like, as long as they're – and the points are almost secondary to the effectiveness of the tandem, you know? It's like they are controlling the tempo. They're picking their spots, you know. If Wade is healthy, he's played like this all year. This isn't just like a random 32-point performance out of nowhere. Like, when he's healthy, he's been this good. You know, he's been scoring 24 to 32 points much for a lot of this season, like on a per-game basis. So, and if Dragic can score, he hasn't been scoring as much, and he's more, to me, the question in that backcourt is him. And continuing to score at such a rate, more so than Wade, because I kind of almost expect that kind of performance from Wade. I mean, not like that, not like what we saw yesterday, but right around that 24 to 32 point margin. That's kind of a large gap, but like right around there, that's when he's effective.
But don't you think, like, from my argument, and it's not, I mean, not really a counterpoint, but don't you think the range is wider? Like, the range between Wade's low game and Wade's high game is much higher. Like, Dragic on a bad night will still probably give you 10 points. On a good night, he'll give you 20 points. Whereas Wade, we've seen performances that are going over 30 and then some where they're right around 10, maybe even dropping into single digits, you know, if he's not feeling particularly well. And again, it doesn't look like injury is an issue, but I just want to see it more consistently from him throughout the rest of the season.
Sure. I mean, I was just looking at his stats, and lately he's just been kind of on a tear. It's been multiple games over 20. Let's see right here. For just March by itself, he's basically averaging 27 points a game, 26.9. I mean, he's putting it together here, and he only missed one game. That was the Washington game that the Heat lost by two. 16 points, 25, 28, 34, 28, 25, 32.
And what's his shooting percentage throughout that stretch?
That would be 52%, 51.9.
Pretty efficient.
That's pretty great. Yeah, but and what I noticed with Dragic running the point is that he can do that. He's allowed to basically just get in the post and do his thing. And I've talked about at length on this podcast before how good he is in the post, and making him handle the ball and do all these other things is really just taking him out of his most effective element at this point. Because you get him in the post or you get him on that pick and roll and things like that, and he's crafty, he's great, he's got all the moves that you'd want out of a guy down there. And I think having Dragic handle the ball and run the offense, it's only helping. And I think we saw like the height of that last night.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty impressive. You know, I wanted to bring it up to you because I know a lot of what we had talked about before with Dragic is how they're controlling the pace. And they're still shooting a league low 76.2 shots per game. But I mean, the difference from what I saw in the Cleveland game and maybe what we've seen on occasion over the last few weeks since Dragic came over via trade was they're just shooting at a much more efficient rate overall. I mean, they shot 55% against Cleveland, and they've probably come pretty close to that since Dragic came over. So he's just getting them, if not necessarily making more shots or taking more shots, they're more efficient. And part of that is his ability to finish at the rim, his ability to find other teammates. I mean, Luol Deng has seemed like he's not necessarily reborn, but he's been much more consistent than he was earlier in the season when he was still kind of trying to find his way. And he copped to it. He said he's still trying to adjust, still trying to figure out how to mesh with these players. It wasn't easy given Wade's injury, then Bosch's injury, et cetera. So, I mean, there's just been so much for him to balance there. But it looks like a much better, much more efficient team ever since Dragic came over.
And I think this team is actually playing faster. If you look at this team was playing at such a slow rate. They were so by far the slowest team in the NBA that I think even since the Dragic trade on a general season scale, they're still the slowest team. But since the Dragic trade, if you're only looking at that, I'm actually trying to look it up right now. I believe they are like something around 18th in pace
since the trade.
Which I think is all that really matters at this point. But
yeah,
I'm actually trying to find it now. I'm on NBA stats post All-Star break here.
Well, I noticed that, you know, they were averaging 76 shots per game overall throughout the course of the season, and then that's what they totaled against Cleveland. So it's just kind of it's weird because you look at that.
Yeah, 14th in pace since the Dragic trade.
That's pretty spectacular. I mean,
from where they were, it's amazing. I mean, it's two different teams. I mean, they're playing faster than the Hawks since the All-Star break.
And they're 11th in overall field goal percentage. That's throughout the course of the season. So again,
right.
if you're taking more shots and you're still scoring at a pretty decent clip, I mean, or you're hitting them on a pretty decent clip. I mean, if you notice the top 10 teams, they're all playoff, you know, contenders at this point. So they're right in the thick of things. Their offense isn't the question anymore. Maybe part of that's also Whiteside getting a lot of better looks at the rim than what we had, you know, through October, November, et cetera, when he hadn't come along yet.
And I think one of the things we saw in this game, and we've seen hints of, but we kind of finally saw it really come together, was how that trio of Whiteside, Wade, and Dragic are going to fit together. And I mentioned it in the recap. Dragic is the tone setter. Wade is able to basically pick his spots now. And Whiteside is the screen setter and the guy that just cleans up things. Because they're still, you know, as good as they were offensively last night, they didn't run that many plays for Whiteside, which has kind of been the knock against Spoelstra and the way they've been using Whiteside lately. Basically since February, I feel like they kind of stopped running, like, they just kind of stopped running as many plays for him, where before I thought they were running, you know, 8 pick and rolls a game for him, you know, as much as 10, 12 in any given game. And now it's more like 4 to 6, you know, at a height. And that's me guesstimating, but I think it's probably pretty accurate. And they're kind of letting him do the Chris Anderson thing where it's like, okay, well, if you get the offensive rebound, do whatever the hell you want with it. But they're also isolating him at times, which we saw last night, as opposed to just running him through a pick-and-roll kind of motion. They just handed him the ball on one play, and he just kind of dominated it. You know what play I'm talking about.
The right block hook shot. Yeah.
And so he's certainly got a variety of moves, and if they can do that with him, and now we're seeing how that three-headed, you know, monster, so to speak, or just that trio is performing together. That was pretty exciting, especially when Deng is allowed to just be that complimentary piece, and you saw how great he looked, even though he only scored like 11 points or something.
Yeah.
he was able to just go ahead and defend and be in his spots. We saw when Bosch went down, he was kind of talking about how he was forced into power forward-like areas on the elbow that he's not comfortable in. He likes being on the wing. He likes being in the perimeter area, in the corner, and he was able to just do that. Chalmers was able to pick his spots. He was able to be, you know, the ball handler at times and then be aggressive when he wanted to, and he's really the only guard coming off the bench. You know, this team just looks like it flows better. There's kind of that glaring weakness still at power forward, you know, because Henry Walker isn't the starter, but he's getting the starter's minutes, like the share of the starter's minutes there. But I can see this team kind of making a run now, and maybe it's just me being an optimist and short-sighted from that Cavs game, but I think it's inarguable that if this team performs even close, like 80 to 90% of what how it played last night against the Cavs, you know, and considering the Cavs are probably the best team in the East right now, that this team can make a run and make the playoffs.
I mean, you can't overlook the fact that Cleveland was on the second night of a back-to-back set, though.
Yeah, you know, the rest of the team didn't play great, but LeBron was there. He started to catch fire late. I don't know. I still think that I don't think that Cleveland being tired on that second night of the back-to-back made Miami running its offense any easier. Maybe it made getting some open shots better. Certainly on the defensive end for them, it was probably easier than it would have been. It looked like Kyrie was a little slow. But just in terms of how this team kind of was working together, you know, I was seeing things like Whiteside finally getting a feel for the game and setting a screen, you know, an impromptu type screen out of nowhere for Dragic, you know, and you know how we always talk about Whiteside coming from the opposite side to block shots on the other side?
Yeah.
You know, he was doing that setting screens too. I mean, his agility and his ability to just get to places with basically one giant step was coming in handy for them, and he was in the motion of the offense. He was before, it seemed like he was just a sore thumb that was just getting buckets. Now he just seems like he's in the flow of the offense, and it seems more and more like that now.
I'm just kind of jaded at this point, you know? I don't know what to expect from the team.
You seem very cautious, and that's probably the right approach.
No, I don't want it, though. I want to go all in and be like, yes, this is it. This is the team. But, I mean, again, to that point of how many different phases there have been, this is just another one where all of a sudden it's a clicking, you know, really uber efficient offense. You know, I don't want it to come to an end, and there seems like, you know, there's always going to be another shoe dropping at some point this season. So, I'm not going as bad as we did early in the season where we were downright pessimistic, nor will I go 100% optimistic, but I'm just cautiously optimistic. Let's say that.
Okay. I'm looking at the height of this thing. I'm excited just to have seen the potential that this team has. And I'm kind of living in the past right now, just saying, like, that's great. Like, when this team's healthy, like, next season, how's Bosch going to fit in there? You know, I think he's going to fit in great in that kind of dynamic. I think it's exciting just to see what this team was capable of, regardless of if they come close to that kind of efficiency and performance again this season, because I'm expecting it to happen next season. I have no reason not to, but you're right. It's when do we hear that Wade just went through surgery and he's going to be out for 3 weeks? Like when do we hear that? When does that happen? Or when does Chris Anderson come down with the bird flu or something? And then
that would be the ultimate irony, wouldn't it?
It would. You're waiting for something horrible to happen, and that's unfortunate just the way the seasons began, but there's, you know, the glass half full and glass half empty way to look at it. Is this another just segment of the season, or is the other shoe going to drop? And it could really go either way.
I will say, though, I did like how Whiteside responded overall as far as, you know, his demeanor. And that was a big question mark considering what had happened in recent weeks with his ejections and the ensuing suspension. There was that one play where Mozgov tossed him down to the ground, and you're kind of wondering, oh, what's going to happen next? Is he going to get frustrated and unload on him or tackle him to the ground or just lose composure? None of those things happened. In fact, he became even more focused, and he started dominating in the second half. I want to, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I want to see what his second half statistics have been recently versus his first half statistics, because correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like he almost comes on stronger in the third quarter, right when Miami used to have those problems earlier this season where they were struggling and couldn't score, etc. All of a sudden, Whiteside just kind of dominates, and he gets, you know, four or five rebounds early and then grabs another eight in the second half, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. He scores more in the second half than he does in the first half. Maybe it's by design. Maybe it's something he's chosen to do. I'm not quite sure what the answer is, but it looks to me, and again, this is the eye test and not necessarily any kind of statistical, you know, background or anything like this, but it looks to me like he's much more effective in the second half than he is in the first. Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it. It's almost like the power running game aspect. It's
yes,
just kind of
right.
Pound him in the middle, and then eventually they weaken, and it's easier for him to get his shots off and things like that. Then, you know, the first quarter, it's always – you kind of have to almost discount it because this team is trying to – the basketball teams are always trying to get everybody involved in that first quarter, right? It's just, let's get you some looks. Let's get you some shots. So it's almost like everybody gets a turn, and then you kind of start getting into a gear later on as the game progresses. But I definitely think there's something to it, for sure, to that ground-and-pound type thing that Whiteside has. I definitely think there's something to that. So, because I've mentioned before how it almost seems like he tries to physically dominate guys and just push them around early in the game, even though it might not necessarily translate into anything in the box score. You just see he's trying to just bully guys. When Whiteside kind of first started clicking gears, it kind of just seemed like the Hassan Whiteside show all the time. You know what I mean? It was just, okay, what can we do to get him involved? What else can we see him do? And it just seemed like they were, like, Wade and Chalmers, they were just always, like, lobbing the ball up for Whiteside and just seeing what would happen after that.
Yes.
Last night it seemed like he kind of bought in. And I think that, and what kind of got me thinking about this was just you saying how he responded to the ejections and things like that. It seemed like he just bought into the whole, I'm on the Miami Heat, that guy LeBron James left us after last season. I'm part of this Heat team that wants to beat him right now in American Airlines Arena. And that was the first time I really felt like he bought into the whole team concept, one mindset, one focus, one goal, let's beat LeBron James tonight. He was kind of part of that whole emotional thing, right? Like, I kind of felt that. Like, again, eye test, body language thing, but that's what he looked like. And it was partly that response, not throwing an elbow, you know, not getting ejected when he probably could have fought, you know, Timofey Mozgov on stuff. It seemed like he really bought in. That was good to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never considered that before, but, you know, that's – maybe this was a turning point where, you know, between Udonis Haslam and Dwayne Wade and the coaching staff and everybody kind of saying, look, we need you out there. You're important to us. We can't afford to have you lose your temper. You know, part of the issue with him has always been this chip on his shoulder that he needs to prove to everybody that they messed up by not giving him a chance, etc. Maybe he has some, you know, major dependency issues there. I know this is going into real, you know, psychological talk here, but like he just wants to feel wanted, you know, which is pretty normal. I think most people feel that same way. But to him, maybe it's a heightened degree than what we're used to seeing from NBA players. And that kind of, you know, conversation, the numerous conversations they had following his ejection, maybe it kind of reinforced what you're saying there, is that, look, you know, you're a part of this team. We embrace your temper and we embrace who you are, but we just want you to focus it a little bit more and have it work for us as opposed to against us. And then that feeds exactly what you were saying, is that now it's us and he's part of that us. And that's great to see. If that's the case, and I don't know that it is, obviously we're talking a lot of, you know, off the wall tangential type thoughts here, but I think that would be really affirming for a lot of fans that aren't quite sure what to expect out of this kid, because, you know, he's still developing and we're not sure how he's going to progress, if he at all progresses. You know, he could take major steps back and then all of a sudden the naysayers that have criticized him his whole career say, oh, we were expecting this to happen, so now you're just proving us right. Maybe he's turning a corner. And you know, if he does, then kudos to Pat Riley for finding something like this, for sticking it out, being patient, for exploring the possibility that maybe he adds something to the team, because no team was willing to take a chance on him, and it's paid off wonderfully for Miami.
Yeah, and we saw the whole spectrum from him last night, and I keep thinking about how he blocked that ball right to, I think it was Henry Walker, late in that game, and he hadn't really done that in quite a while, where everybody was praising him for being able to block shots but keep him in bounds and like almost make them passes to his teammates. Yeah. It was that kind of control. Like, to have, if he can demonstrate control on something as exciting as blocking a shot and control it to a point where it's a pass to a teammate, I see no reason why he can't control his emotions and just everything. Like, that, there's that, his huge physique and brute strength and just immense natural talent that he clearly has, being able to control that the way he did, and to do that, to set screens for his teammates when he wasn't even rolling to the basket, to roll to the basket and find his spots, open zones and such, to, from all that to just getting the ball on the right block and going with a flurry of post moves and finishing with a hook shot. That was the gauntlet that we saw from Whiteside last night. We basically saw everything that we could see, that we have seen in one game from him last night. And I don't think it was one of his, it wasn't his 25 rebound game. It wasn't like this monster off the charts. He had a double-double, but I liked how balanced his game was. And I thought that was kind of a low-key storyline throughout that game.
Glad you pointed it out, though.
That's my job. Why we have a podcast.
Absolutely.
So, another guy who's been a little surprising, Michael Beasley, is a better defensive player than offensive player now, I guess. What the hell happened? Is this the same Michael Beasley that we kind of sent to China? Or did he switch with somebody over there? And like the old Michael Beasley is just like strung out in the streets in Tokyo smoking dope or whatever it is. Like, what's going on?
That's an interesting idea, and I'd love to picture Michael Beasley that way, but that seems much more in line with the person he was in the past. But
if you would have told me a year ago which one happened, Michael Beasley went to China, dropped out of the Chinese league, and is just doing whatever Chinese drugs he can get his hands on, or he comes back for a series of two-day contracts and gets signed for the rest of the season, mostly because of his defensive skills, I would have said the former, 100% of the time.
Yeah, Beasley plus opium den equals absolutely believable. I mean,
hasn't that already happened? I thought that happened when he was in Minnesota. He kind of is similar.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that the Twin Cities has a lot of opium dens there, but and why not? It gets cold during
they
the
do,
winter.
They do. They do. Trust me.
Wow. You're much more in tune with that than I had previously expected, yeah. Which is great. We'll have a conversation offline. But it's all about the effort then, right? I mean, you know, obviously you have to have some physical tools. You have to have some kind of lateral quickness there. But clearly he's focused and engaged, and that's something we haven't seen from him. Like, the words focused and engaged haven't been part of a sentence with Michael Beasley in it, unless you include the word not before them. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's guarding LeBron James on the perimeter. Sure, he gave up the blow-by, but, I mean, he was willing to do it. He's, you know, he's down in a defensive crouch. He's you know, willing and able, and that's something that Heat fans haven't seen. So I wonder
– he was anchoring that zone defense, the middle of the zone defense for, like, two straight games.
You know, I wonder if part of – the mystique about Michael Beasley,
it's,
and why he's so,
it's clear why you would get the two confused, but go ahead.
Why he's so beloved in Miami is because of the whole disparity between the offense and the defense in his games, and now that there's more of a balance, I wonder if he'll fall out of favor with the Heat faithful.
Oh, interesting.
Like, we want our classic rejects version of Beasley, you know, kind of goofy, putting up incredible amounts of shots.
And, yeah, we don't want serious, focused Beasley. What fun is that?
I do, but I wonder how many Heat fans that love the version that he was in the past would feel the same way.
If they truly do love Beasley, they want the best for him. That's what I'd say.
Set him free to China and he'll come back to you.
That's what it was all about. China, well, LeBron went to Miami for college. Beasley went to China, and he came back, and he returned home, the homecoming of Beasley. So this might be the homecoming that we haven't really been calling it or expecting it to be.
Is he an option starting at power forward moving in the future?
because the way he's been playing at on defense, I see no reason why not. He's got the size, certainly. That's never been the question. So it might be better than Haslam playing at power forward, because that he basically starts the game, plays 7 to 10 minutes a game, it's been about, in this new rotation, this new like 9-man rotation that Spoelstra has been using the last few games.
Yeah.
And then Walker just comes in and plays 24-ish minutes a game there. And that hasn't – they want Walker to shoot like 6 3-pointers a game, but I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go until he starts getting hot. It might be better to give Beasley those minutes there and just let Walker play – just maybe just switch him. Let Walker play backup small forward, backup guard a little bit maybe, and just kind of use him sparingly until you notice he gets hot and then just throw him in there. Because he's going to get hot. It's just a matter of time before he gets hot. He's a good shooter. He's just not shooting well right now.
We're talking about Walker.
Yeah. So maybe kind of pull him out of the rotation. I don't see the – like, if you want to still start Haslam as a name starter only just to kind of balance the rotations a little bit, I don't have a problem with it. But then starting to use Beasley more at the four I think might be a good move.
I mean, that could be a really – dangerous team, right? I mean, offensively, yeah. that seems like it would be. I don't know what. I mean, we should look into it. I don't know if the starting five, if that lineup with Beasley has played at any point in the season.
Like, I think the power forward Beasley could be almost like Mike Scott in Atlanta.
Huh.
But less maybe a little bit more versatile.
And less floor. I mean, does Scott shoot to free for the three?
Yeah, I think Beasley would if that. I think Scott shoots the three, but they kind of maneuver a lot of corner threes for him. If you had Beasley in that power forward spot, there might be an opportunity for that. So, but just like in general, like as a like Mike Scott's a decent scorer, Beasley's a decent scorer. I think that might be kind of that might be the look there. I'm going through my head thinking of like similar type power forwards. As a Beasley power forward. And that's kind of the guy that sticks out to me right now.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, that one works. So I like Beasley at the four. That's where I thought he was going to play more of, but he's been just the backup to Lual Deng, which is also great because he's been really what Danny Granger was supposed to be. Deng was supposed to be the defensive stopper, consistency man who starts the game, and Granger was supposed to come off the bench and just be an offensive threat for a few minutes a game until Deng came back in. And that's really what Beasley's been. You know, even if he's not scoring a lot, he's still an offensive threat. He demands close protection, you know. And that's kind of, he's been filling the Granger spot more than he's been filling the Bosch spot, which is, and they signed him after Bosch went down. So it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder whether or not if he shifts into the starting lineup, do they use Haslam as a backup power forward and then kind of have Henry Walker fill that Beasley role of a backup to Lual Deng?
Yeah, that's probably what they do. I still think that if you start playing Beasley more power forward minutes, then you just keep Haslam as the starter for the first until like that first sub, like that first official timeout or first round of subs, and then you just take him out and then put Beasley in just for rotation's sake. That's like the only way it works.
Yeah.
Kind of use Beasley in both spots, a combo forward.
I like the idea. I mean, I know he's still getting acclimated, and Spoelstra is hesitant to change, I think. And certainly, I don't think he wants to change Haslam's minutes around too much, but it's something worth considering. I don't know why anybody hasn't asked him, and maybe they have, and I just haven't noticed it, but I don't know why he's not getting more consideration as a starter or at least getting a bulk of the minutes at the four spot.
Henry Walker got 24 minutes last night and Beasley got 16. So you can really just flip those minutes around. And I don't think Henry Walker's been as bad as he's kind of been made out to be on Twitter. I feel like Twitter really is just starting to hate Henry Walker out of nowhere.
I don't know. You can't take what they do seriously. I mean, unless they're complimenting us in our writing, in which case, absolutely, you can take them seriously. But if they're being critical, then just dismiss it like everybody else does.
Yeah, I don't know. Heat Twitter is really critical of different players. And I kind of noticed that with Haslam, they're never critical of Haslam. He can have one rebound, and all of a sudden, he's the hero again. But he can miss like three or four shots in a row, and nobody talks about it. But as soon as Chalmers misses like two shots in a row, they're like, oh, what's his problem? Why is he still in there? Meanwhile, he'll go 6 for 10 and score 16 points. And nobody talks about it when he's good.
So we talked about that earlier, right, with Norris Cole. I mean,
yeah.
Norris Cole could, you know, save a baby and he'd still be insulted, whereas, you know, Udonis Haslem could punch an angel in the face and he'd be like, well, that angel had it coming, clearly.
It's just, I feel like Norris Cole got traded and then there's Sean Williams was getting hated on. I don't like how Twitter just hates on random people. And then Norris Cole gets traded and they're like, oh, well, we were just kind of kidding. This is just the way we are. It's like, screw you guys. You guys were so mean.
Did anybody actually say, no, we were just kidding around?
Nobody said come back, but everybody was like, all of a sudden it was like, best of luck at NCole30 or whatever his thing is. And then I was like, you guys are the worst, most, oh my gosh. It really annoyed me. And I like Heat Twitter to a point, but that really, I didn't like that.
Well, I mean, last night, the American Airlines Arena, fans holding up poster boards saying, come back in 2016, LeBron.
Yeah, and then they were booing him when he dunked.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's like the whole mob mentality thing. Like two or three guys start booing and everybody's like drunk by then. So it was just like, yeah, whatever. And it was more like cheering for us, like we're winning, I felt like, was like the booing of him. But Heat fans didn't really understand what the difference was.
Well, it was just such an empty move on his part. It's like, you know, you're down 25 at this point or 20-something.
Yeah, he was taunting a little bit, right? Like, that was – yeah, I think you're right.
And then what do you think of his, like, hot shooting towards the end of the game? Too little, too late? Does he feel – I think I brought this up during the Christmas Day game. Like, is there a little bit of guilt there from LeBron? Maybe he doesn't have the heart to, like, go all ham on the Heat – considering what you know, what happened over the last year or whatever.
Did we talk about this after Christmas?
I thought I could have sworn I brought it up to you. Cause
did I immediately dismiss it?
Are you going to now?
I think I might.
Okay, well, go for it then. I mean, look, you could have just been tired and sore, and I have no idea what I'm talking about. But
no,
I mean, in two performances against Miami, oh, hell, I know why we brought it up. It wasn't even the Christmas Day one. It was the second game in between. Where there was one play in particular where he had, I think, a fast break and he laid it up or something, or it was an and one type situation and he just kind of laid it up as opposed to dunking it.
That's right.
And as he was going to the sideline, Kyrie Irving's like, hey, what the hell? Why did you dunk it? And then on the next play, he goes ahead and says, okay, fine, I'll dunk it. Like, you know, that's part of who we think LeBron is that he's easily manipulated, even as he claims he's his own man and, you know, he makes his own decisions, et cetera. He's still influenced by people. He still wants to be, again, liked, kind of like Whiteside. and so what if there's still the possibility that he's a little guilty? Because we didn't see that when he was going to Cleveland. But then again, that was that first season when he embraced the whole villain role. And he kind of had to, like, show the people in Cleveland, you know, shut them the hell up in order to continue with that whole theme for this season. But maybe this one, because of the whole feel-good nature, the way he was so welcome back on December 25th, and, you know, the whole video and everything else, the tribute video.
We really got into his head. Good job. That was all Pat Riley. He knows exactly what he was doing.
I feel like you're making fun.
No, I'm not. Well, a little bit, but... I mean, slightly facetious, but I don't know. I definitely sensed some of that in the earlier games. I don't know about this game. I didn't feel it as much.
I mean, he was pretty bad. I mean,
in the beginning he was, but it was.
Yeah, but again, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to go ahead and score. He hit 3 3-pointers in a row and had like 11 points straight. But it's like, yeah, but you're kind of down 20-something at this point. You want to get your points now. That's fine.
LeBron's so good. Like, if you just give him like a little bit more room, he could start hitting those shots, you know? So I feel like some of that was just the Heat being up and laying off a little bit.
Right.
But so it's not like that first half where he was just bad. It's not like we haven't seen one half really bad LeBron. You know, second half amazing LeBron, like probably 60 times when he was in Miami. You know, we saw that all the time.
But it was just different, though. I mean, like, he didn't have anybody else to back him up.
Yeah. I don't know. You might. There might be something there. I definitely think there's some sort of guilt, or he definitely treats the Heat differently. He treats the Heat differently, and I think that might be all there is.
Okay, fine. I won't go so far as to call it guilt, then, but let's just say there's something lingering there in his thought process.
There's a respect for the organization. I think he doesn't want to go out. Like LeBron, for his entire career, he's always wanted to put on a show, right? Like that's kind of been his thing. He wants to have... He wants to be the greatest ever. Or he wants to be like the most physically dominant thing in the galaxy, like on every given night. But I think, and he approaches most games like that. I think even still to a point, it might be a little bit different. Like it might be more of a mental thing now where he just wants to be like just the most dominant player on every game. But I think there's like a sense of respect that he has for the Heat. Like, I think it's respect. I hope it's respect.
Do you have any animosity toward him? It's less, right? I mean,
it's
like
certainly less. I don't know. When I first got the news that he was leaving, like that was more disappointment that I didn't get to watch him play every night because he was so good. As opposed to, like, why the hell did you do that? What's wrong with you? I can't believe you strung us along this whole time. Those feelings started to come in later, but it was more like disappointment, like, oh, man, like, this is over. And then I thought Chris Bosh was leaving, and then he didn't. But because, you know, he's a loyal, good human being, and LeBron's not. But other than that, like, there's absolutely no animosity.
Not at all. That last line there, nothing, no.
I don't know. I still watch Cleveland a lot, and I don't like watch him and say, "Oh man, I wish he was still on the Heat." Like I obviously think that would be great, but
sure.
I think I moved on by now. What about you?
If I start going down to that dark place in my thoughts, you know, maybe I'll start feeling some of that same resentment, like that feeling that you had about, oh, I'm gonna miss the greatest show on earth, or I'm gonna miss seeing this great player on a nightly basis. That never entered into my thoughts. Never, never did. It was the I can't believe it. It was the utter shock and dismay, and I had no idea that it was coming. Like obviously there was so much buildup over it, and it was just the worst possible scenario, the worst possible result. You know, because you keep justifying all the tweets and all the sources and everything else saying he was going to Cleveland or going to Miami, going somewhere else. And then at the same time, you're kind of thinking, no, why would he ever go back to Cleveland? And then when he does eventually go back to Cleveland, I was at a loss for words. But now, I don't know, I just feel like this season has progressed in so many different ways. Again, those different segments of the season, that seems like a million years ago. And albeit, now I want that skill set there. Like, I mean, he did have an amazing dunk yesterday, and I was the first to tweet out. I was like, you know what, I don't mind admitting, I love to see that, and I love seeing it when he was in a Heat uniform. And I think that's fair. I mean, he's an incredible player to watch. He really is. And I love seeing him perform in a Miami Heat uniform. But no animosity. Not anymore.
Yeah. I think you and I admittedly are Heat fans, but we also enjoy the rest of the NBA, I think, a fair amount, you know?
Sure.
And this season especially, I'm surprised by how much I've enjoyed this NBA season as a whole, despite how frustrating the Heat have been. I've really enjoyed this basketball year. But now removing my fandom from the LeBron James experience almost gives me a more wholesome view of him. Whereas opposed, we'd kind of, and we've talked about this, like we'd kind of glance off his obvious flaws and character weaknesses and things like that, and we'd just give him the benefit of the doubt all the time. But now it's easier to just watch him and view him as the total package now and say, okay, this is clearly where his flaws are. He is easily manipulated. He is kind of, you know, wishy-washy and changes his mind a lot, but there's still like an obvious sense of insecurity, but he's really, really, really good, and we can just watch it. And we almost get the thrill, so to speak, of watching him kind of make this Cavaliers team work, like this whole new project that he's got, like that we saw already in Miami. We kind of get a new sensation of that from like the outsider's perspective, like, oh, when he was with the Heat, oh yeah, this is going to work. Obviously this is going to work. They're going to click. It's, this team's too talented not to work. And when he was in Cleveland, they're like, oh, well, we don't know if this is going to work. We're a little bit more doubtful. And it looks like it's actually clicking, much in the same way that the Heat did. But yeah, I think it's just like, there's something, you know, if we're going to look on the bright side, which we rarely do on this podcast, that yes. might be the way to do it.
Two things about that. It almost reminds me, like when you were talking about, you know, that people can now kind of appreciate the success of a new project. It brought to mind like bands, you know, like I kept thinking like if Paul McCartney and not John and Yoko Ono had broken up the Beatles, if it had been Paul's fault, would we still have appreciated him when he was in that other band, Wings or something? I mean, I don't know. I know that's a hell of a dated reference. It's not like I ever saw Wings or anything like that, but it just reminds me, like, you know, the breakup of the big three felt a little bit like the breakup of the Beatles, you know? Right. I mean, and so now he has this side project. Do you still root for that side project the way that you did for the Beatles or the Heatles? Yeah, I could see the perspective there. And then as far as like your overall appreciation of the league, I wonder how much of that, and we've never talked about this before, I wonder how much of that is kind of like a byproduct of him joining Cleveland. Because over the last 4 years, there hasn't been this much kind of excitement and parity and general appreciation for the league, right? I mean, even as good as the Western Conference was, you almost felt like with the exception of that time last year when San Antonio was just clicking the way they did, it was all like who was going to set themselves up to lose against the Heat. You know, there was that first year, you know, with Dallas. That to me has always been a major fluke. You know, the next 2 years, clearly Miami was still the better team in the league. But it always felt like, you know, the power balance was more like a pyramid. You had Miami at top and then kind of other teams filtering in there. Now it's evened out, right, where you have a lot more really good teams. And it sounds cliche, but it really is more wide open than it's been in a long time.
Absolutely. That has everything to do with it. And I think some of it has to do with LeBron going to Cleveland and creating a new contender over there and the Heat. You know, I still enjoy watching the Heat because they're my team, you know, and as frustrating as it can be. I'm surprised. And, you know, it's other storylines like this whole new generation, the Anthony Davises, and then like those point guards, like Kyrie Irving, James Harden, if you want to include him, but like, or let's just say guards, so Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Westbrook. None of them have won a finals yet. So it's almost like they're racing to see which one is going to be the first. And they're all almost, they're kind of right in that mix right now where they could be the first. I'll throw John Wall in there too. It's that.
Chris Paul.
There we go. It'll be interesting to see if he wins a playoff series. I think there's something to that too. I think there's a lot of, they're really great right now, but all of them are like, you know, 22, 23, 24 years old and could be a lot better. And their teams around them can be a lot better too. So I think that's really interesting. But I've also been really surprised by how enjoyable this season has been despite all of the injuries. I felt like there was a lot more injuries to key players this year, like Paul George. And Derrick Rose are some big ones. Kawhi Leonard missed so much of the beginning of the year. You know, random guys have gone down for long spurts. Bosch has gone down. LaMarcus Aldridge now. Durant, Westbrook at varying points. I mean, you know, Zach Randolph in Memphis. There's a lot of guys that are just like going, like enjoyable to watch people that are just being injured.
Yeah.
And the season's still extremely enjoyable. Wesley Matthews.
Absolutely.
So,
speaking of Wesley Matthews, shall we look ahead to the weekly schedule?
Nice segue. I love awesome. That. That was, wow. Jeez. I got to take a moment. All right.
Well, we have to take a moment anyway for our introduction music.
Yeah, that introduction music that exists. I'll play it now.
Milk and cereal.
Cereal, cereal.
All right. So Wednesday, the Portland Trailblazers, Wesley Matthews' team. He's not playing.
No, he's not.
That team has actually been okay with Aaron Aflalo.
I mean, he's a duplicate, right, of their skill set, basically?
He's like a light version. He's not as good defensively, and he's not as – I don't think he can get as hot as a shooting-wise. Like, Wesley Matthews is just – he can go on a streak and just go 7-for-7 in a game, and I wouldn't be shocked if I saw that in a box score. If I saw Aflalo 7-for-7 three-pointers, I'd be like, what? Like, has he ever had a game like that? But, yeah, I mean, their skill set-wise, they're very similar. But that bench is obviously – they don't. That bench doesn't have Aflalo coming off it anymore because he's in the starting lineup. So that it definitely takes a hit.
You know, they've gone, if I'm looking at this right, 8 of their last 10. They've won 8 of their last 10. So, I mean, yeah. Clearly they're still a pretty good team.
Yeah, yes, definitely. And I think that the Wesley Matthews injury didn't hurt them as much as maybe we initially anticipated in terms of a win-loss. But we'll see how that plays out for the balance of the season. I don't know. So, I don't even know, like, I don't know if this team's going to – I don't know if the Heat are going to beat them. I don't know what to expect from this Heat team anymore. This team could be really good and could just wipe the floor with Portland. Or they could just get decimated by 15. This is how it always goes. This is what we always say.
Whiteside, Robin Lopez.
Robin Lopez has been known to get beat by guys like Whiteside.
Okay. So that's a matchup that he can dominate. Aflalo and Wade, that's actually much more interesting than I would have expected, but I think they'll balance out pretty well. So Dame Lillard, Goran Dragic, you know, a lot more experience there being formerly of the Western Conference, so that should be one to watch.
Yeah, certainly.
And I like the edge we have with Batum and Deng. I think we have the edge there, at least in the starting lineup. So it all comes down to whether or not Udonis and whomever fills in for him can limit LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, he's been so – yeah, he's been great. Even with the injured hand, he's still been a real good player.
Yeah. So it would be like Haslam, but Haslam's going to get yanked pretty quick, I think.
Can a new defensive stopper, Michael Beasley, harass LaMarcus Aldridge?
I think he certainly can. I mean, we saw him harass LeBron in a couple of occasions. I mean, what if he could do that, why can't he do it to LaMarcus Aldridge? He's got the length to put his hands up in front of him. I'm interested to see if they still put Henry Walker on Aldridge and kind of go the small man against the big guy and just try to bother him enough to get the ball away from him. That more could be an option.
More importantly, cereal or not cereal?
I think the Trailblazers are cereal. I think they really they've kind of focused in here. I think they've or not cereal then. They're not cereal.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was kind of they were cereal at the beginning of the year, and now I don't think they're not cereal. This whole Wesley Matthews thing, it's like, all right, enough games. Let's get down to brass tacks here.
The fact that they haven't, you know, they traded for certain players, that they made some moves where traditionally they haven't. This is a team that's much more serious, much more not serial than we would ever have expected, especially in Portland. So now all of a sudden they're like, and they're embraced by the Rip City fans there. I mean, they love them, even though this is a team that's completely atypical for the whole community.
Atypical in the way that they're actually like, they give a shit?
Yes, there you go.
Okay. Well, the community there usually doesn't care about much, but they do love them there. It's that home court advantage that they have in the playoffs.
It's real.
Yeah, it's a real thing. That place gets loud. That place is packed to the roof. I mean, they're one of my favorite teams in the West to watch, but I think the Heat have a few good matchups, like you mentioned, but that LaMarcus Aldridge thing, he could win it for him. Luckily, the game's at home, right?
Yes, it is.
So, and I think that's less to do with Miami being a good home team, because they're not, but we just don't want to play, like we just said, how hard it is to play in Portland, and because it's on the opposite side of the country from Miami, that's good not to have to travel. But Friday is the Denver Nuggets. I don't know what this team is. Cereal, not cereal. I don't, like, they're bad like a cereal team, but
But they're better now.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're getting better. But, like, I keep going back to that comment. Who was it that said, like, oh, just a few more games, like, so many games and then the season's over with? Remember when, like, we kind of got that sneak peek into the huddle and somebody said that?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh, it was, like, a couple weeks ago, I think. And so there was, like, 42 more games or something like that. And it was, like, the exact... I love that. So yeah, that's,
they were
like,
done early.
Not cereal.
Cereal. That's, like, that's beyond cereal, you know? That's, like, deconstructed cereal, almost.
Oh, wow. Like,
because it's, like, they're so... careless and thoughtless that it's just like the season is no longer a concern for them, and so now they're just free to do whatever the hell they want to, and they just happen to go occasionally into the office to play basketball.
So cereal.
Yeah, totally cereal.
Totally cereal. All right. That's a weird kind of cereal though. Like it that is. Free, like what kind of cereal is just like that, like free spirited? What's a free spirited cereal?
It's Denver, it's Colorado. I would say it's like nuggets of like nugs in bong water. That's what I think it is. It's a bunch of marijuana nugs in bong water.
that's probably what everybody eats.
Yeah. That's a $11.95 special at your local dealer.
Dealer, got it. Sunday, Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City is not cereal anymore.
No, they're not.
I thought they were having a little bit of fun there.
They did.
And then Ibaka went down 4 to 6 weeks with successful surgery. Love how that press release was headlined. Serge Ibaka has a successful surgery, and like it's like he'll be out for 6 weeks. That's so PI talk, but
I don't want to disparage the organization, but at the same time, it's just it is a little strange, right, that they would put a headline like that. I mean,
I thought that was a little funny. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not cereal anymore. You're absolutely right. And you would think, like, you have like an agent of chaos like Russell Westbrook, but he doesn't seem to be enjoying himself. I don't know what it is. They're losing some. The injuries are taking their toll. Like my feeling about this team, which I cover regularly over at thunderousintentions.com. That's thunderousintentions.com.
I'm bleeping that out.
I think they're not equipped emotionally or mentally to handle the struggle of the season. It's just been too much. You know, Durant in and out of the lineup, Westbrook in and out of the lineup.
What do they do with Ibaka now? Like, do they move Kanter over there? Because he can kind of shoot?
No, I mean, they have their options. I think, like, I was previewing tomorrow's game where they face Boston, which is, you know, competing with Miami for that eighth spot. And Boston's featuring a three-guard lineup with, you know, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and...
Isaiah Thomas.
No, Isaiah Thomas is hurt. Evan Turner,
yeah, because he's kind of a guard.
Right. So he's got this smaller lineup there. And then conversely, Scott Brooks has been fielding the twin towers of Enes Kanter and Steven Adams, where Adams is playing in the power forward spot in Ibaka's absence.
Okay.
And it's like a game of chicken. Who's gonna waver first? Is it Scott Brooks or Brad Stevens? Because a really small lineup versus a really big lineup, and I have no idea who's gonna make up.
Well, you
first.
Would think the worst coach, Brooks, right, who's just generally seen as the lesser of those two coaches, would waver first. But the kind of problem with Brooks is that he's so stubborn. That's kind of the issue with them. So
it's tough to say. I mean, it works. It works well against Miami. I think that should be an interesting one.
Yeah.
I don't think Udonis Haslam and Steven Adams can compete. I'd love to see a fight between those two. Not really, because I like both players as individuals. But I mean, that would be such an interesting.
If you had to pick Haslam versus Adams or Whiteside versus Adams. Or we could go with duos. Yeah. We can go Haslam and Whiteside versus Steven Adams and, pick a guy.
Oh, and it's Kanter, you mean?
Yeah, we can throw Kanter in there. Whoever, it doesn't matter.
Like, it's like, who would I want or would I want to see?
Who would you want to see? Tag teaming it.
Oh, I mean, wow. Haslam and Whiteside. No, let's go. Oh, Dion Waiters.
Ooh, Dion and...
Dion and Steven Adams. I don't know. It just seems like that. I want to see what happens. Like, I think Waiters would obviously not be able to contend with either Haslam or Whiteside, but damn, would he try, right? I mean, he would give it his all. I mean, yeah. That would be the most interesting scenario.
Definitely most entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I think, so we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, they're not serial, and I think we'll see the matchup between the Thunder and the Celtics, which I'll be covering at thundersintentions.com. I'll see whether or not they're able to regroup from the news about Ibaka, whether or not they'll give Miami as much of a challenge, because otherwise Miami could steal a win there, even though they've won 10 straight against Eastern Conference teams. This is the Thunder. And they've won like 15 of 18 games over there in Oklahoma City. So it's not a good place to play either. There is a home court advantage there for the Thunder. But I just don't know if they're going to be so demoralized from the loss of Ibaka, whether or not they'll be able to even contend.
I'll be interested to see if this Heat team kind of gets up like emotionally for the Thunder. Because the Heat and the Thunder clearly have a history, but it's not like this Heat team. And a lot of that Thunder team might not even be there.
Oh, yeah.
So it's... But the two organizations kind of do. So, I'd be interested to see like how you can kind of get a sense when this team's riled up and invested. It'll be interesting to see if that happens.
No, it's I don't sense the same kind of, like from Oklahoma City, I don't sense that kind of urgency or impulse. I did nothing. I mean,
I'm talking just from the Heat, because the Heat kind of, it was all directed. I didn't get that sense from the Cavs last night, you know, but I saw the Heat were really up and ready to get at them yet last night.
But that's still fresh, though. I mean, you've got eight players or six or eight players somewhere around there from the Heat who were there last year who played with LeBron James, and he's no longer there. That's a different scenario. I mean, the guys that are in Oklahoma City right now, you got Nick Collison and Russell Westbrook, and that's pretty much it, right? I mean, no Tabo Sefolosha, no Derek Fisher. You know, Steven Adams is a new player, no James Harden. So who's left there but people who just didn't give a crap about Miami or you know, they never even played the Big Three era at some point.
Yeah, and Durant's not there to say that Harden's better than Wade. And
right. Well, he'll be there. He'll be down the sideline where it doesn't count.
That's although true.
He may
Wade come might back, just though. Use that. Wade, it sounds, that seems like something Wade would use. Like, hey, I still remember that you said that and you're sitting there and you're injured. But whatever.
Good point.
All right. Well, we'll do another podcast next Monday before the next slate of games. But Portland Nuggets, OKC, what do you think? Do we dare guess? Or should we just not do that anymore?
I'm not going to.
Okay, I'm not going to do it either. So I was going to let you do it if you wanted to. We're just not touching that anymore. This is where you come for hard-hitting opinions and hot takes is the Heat Check. So thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes. Subscribe, rate us, say nice things about us. David, I think we're going to hit 5,000 total plays after this podcast goes up.
That's incredible. To think of where we started from, our humble beginnings.
Cue Drake song. So, yeah, this is episode 22, I think. So a huge thanks to the loyal listeners out there, especially the ones that reach out. Those that don't, you know, we definitely appreciate the listening that you do to this podcast. I know that sometimes we had some audio issues. It seems like those have been fixed. We did go through a brief period where it wasn't on iTunes, so we had to knock it down. But it looks like all of you resubscribed, which is amazing. So, yeah, thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.